HR Info. Das Interview.
Mit Jan Tussing. Er ist nichts weniger als ein Friedensnobelpreisträger und reiht sich damit in die Reihe von so illustren Männern ein wie Barack Obama, Michael Gorbatschow und Nelson Mandela. Mohamed Yunus und seine Bank, die Grameen Bank, wurden 2006 ausgezeichnet für ihre Verdienste in der Armutsbekämpfung. Yunus kommt aus Bangladesch und hat Wirtschaftswissenschaften studiert. Er hatte in den 80er Jahren nämlich die glorreiche Idee, Kleinstkredite zu vergeben, sogenannte Mikrokredite, vor allem an Frauen. Damit hat er viele Menschen aus der Armut katapultiert. Jetzt ist er gerade in Deutschland, um die Idee des Social Business vorzustellen. Dazu hat er auch ein Buch veröffentlicht. In HR Info das Interview wollten wir von ihm wissen, wie er zum Armutsbekämpfer wurde und wie sich sein Leben durch den Nobelpreis verändert hat.
Hello, Mr. Yunus. Thanks for being here. You and your Grameen Bank were awarded the Nobel Peace Prize in 2006. In the past, very many statesmen like Barack Obama, Nelson Mandela and Shimon Peres got awarded. Has your life changed since?
Yes, this prize is an enormous recognition. So it draws attention of the entire world and focus is on you and your work. Everybody believes in what you have done. So the floodlight of the world, global floodlight, is on you. And what previously you told people, you tried to get across, nobody listened. Suddenly after that, everybody wants to listen what you're saying. But it may not last long because the next year another person or another organization is getting the award and the whole attention goes there and your attention from you will disappear if you're not continuously doing something. But it definitely it draws attention for the whole world, and this is your time to explain what you're doing and why you're doing. The communication can be done right away.
In the 70s, your home country, Bangladesh, was struck by a severe famine with many deaths, and you started lending money to people, mainly women, to help them start a business. So the idea of microcredit was born in the 70s. Has the famine in Bangladesh changed your life or changed your perspective on the world?
As a young teacher, I was looking for ways how to make sure that I'm useful to people rather than a useless teacher of economics. And that's where the microcredit began. I wanted to protect one or two persons from the loan sharks. And one idea is, why don't I lend the money so that he doesn't have to go to the loan shark? And then he's protected. Mm-hmm. And I say, yeah, I can do more. I can give it to more people who need the money and go to the loan shark. And all of them will be protected from the loan shark because I'm giving the money.
So you started the bank.
I started the whole bank after that because it became so popular, so big. Then I thought, why don't I create a bank out of it? So I started in 76 and turned into a bank in 1983.
I haven't heard of many people who started a bank by their own. I think it sounds very interesting, intriguing. Mm-hmm. Were you surprised by this big success?
I had no idea it would become so big. And I had no idea that it would work outside of Bangladesh. I had no idea it would become a global phenomenon. So these are the things which gradually revealed itself rather than at any point I was planning for that and so on. I became convinced that poor people are as good human beings as anybody else. I was convinced by seeing them at a very close range. They have all the creative power to take care of themselves. Simply society is not giving them an opportunity to get out of this, use their creative power. They're always saying, we'll give you charity so that you can survive. I said, no, that's charity is not the solution. Charity only keeps them alive. That's not the solution of their problem. Their solution of the problem is to help them unleash their energy, unleash the creative capacity they have. Then they are on their own. They don't need anybody's help.
And what was your personal motivation? How do you live today? Would you say you are rich today thanks to what you've done?
I was not looking for money. I was just looking for things to do, to solve problems.
So you want to help people?
Help people.
Mohamed Yunus will einfach nur Menschen helfen. Er wuchs in Bangladesch auf. In den 70er Jahren war das Land von einer großen Hungersnot betroffen, bei der Hunderttausende Menschen starben. Als Lehrer wollte er nützlich sein und Menschen vor Kredithaien schützen. Und er fragte sich, warum er nicht den Menschen Geld leiht. So wurde die Idee der Mikrokredite geboren. Und weil die Idee so gut angenommen wurde, gründete er eine Bank. Das war 1983. Er hätte sich nie träumen lassen, dass es außerhalb Bangladesch erfolgreich sein und ein globales Phänomen werden würde. Als nächstes fragte ich Yunus nach der Grameen Bank. Inwiefern ist sie anders als herkömmliche Geschäftsbanken? Und wie wusste er, dass es funktionieren würde?
In your book you describe how very different Grameen Bank is from traditional banks. Could you just in a nutshell explain in what way they're different? Because of course here we have a view of bankers as taking as much interest as the market allows. So what's the difference between Grameen Bank and traditional banks?
One way I try to explain when people ask me, how did you design this bank, which works on the poor people, because poor people cannot pay you back. They will eat the money and won't be able to pay you back anymore. I designed it by looking at the conventional banks. Since I don't have any experience of running a bank, so I look at the conventional banks, how they do it in each case. Once I learn, I just do the opposite. And it works for the poor people. Conventional bank go to the rich, I go to the poor. Conventional bank go to the city center to set up their branches, I go to the remote villages. Conventional banks love to work with the men, I decided to work with women. So majority of the borrowers in Grameen Bank are women, 97% are women. Today we have over 9 million borrowers, 97% women. They want to work in the city, we work in the village. They work in with the offices. We said, no, people should not come to the bank. Bank should go to the people. So we work at the doorstep of the people. So today we have 9 million borrowers in 80,000 villages. We meet all those 9 million borrowers, 80,000 villages, at their doorstep within 1 week to do the business with them. So that's the kind of differences that we have between the conventional bank and the bank. And we don't have any collateral. The essence of conventional banking is about collateral. You have to have some more than what you get from the bank. Mm. So poor people cannot come anywhere near you. We dismiss this whole idea of collateral. It's a trust-based banking.
My bank takes money off me. So would you give me money?
If you are poor, I'll check it out. And then if you qualify, then we'll definitely go through the whole process.
What makes me a poor person, in your view?
In our view, we have a definition of what a poor person is in Bangladesh context. A poor person is someone who lives in a one-room house with a hut, with a leaky roof, no furniture inside, and everything is within that little room. If you find that person, that's where you begin your work.
So we don't have very many people in leaking houses in Germany. So you wouldn't be working in Germany?
It will be relative. So here we'll see what at the bottom most people like. That's what the poor in your context. And we work in the United States. So to give an example of the United States, people who live in the city slums and so on, ghettos, we go around and talk to them. Most of them are undocumented people. They don't have any reason to stay in this country. They're always shaken, always worried about what happens to them next. So we give them the money. Mm. And today we have more than 100,000 borrowers of that kind, all women, 100% women.
In the U.S.?
In the U.S. And we have given over $1 billion in loan, and they paid back in perfect repayment, or near 100%, 99.5% and above.
Mohamed Yunus hatte keine Ahnung, wie man eine Bank gründet. Deswegen schaute er sich traditionelle Banken an und machte genau das Gegenteil. Traditionelle Banken gehen zu den Reichen, er ging zu den Armen. Traditionelle Banken haben Filialen in den Stadtzentren, er ging aufs Land. Traditionelle Banken bevorzugen Männer, er entschied sich, mit Frauen zu arbeiten. Von 9 Millionen Kreditnehmern sind 97% Frauen. Und Yunus fragt nie nach Sicherheiten. Der Kredit beruht einzig auf Vertrauen. Gerade ist sein drittes Buch erschienen, der Titel »Ein anderer Kapitalismus ist machbar«. Hat er die Erkenntnis, dass der heutige Kapitalismus nicht funktioniert?
You finished writing your recent book called »Is a different capitalism possible?« Is that your finding, your realization that capitalism today doesn't work?
It's true. That's what I start my book saying, that it's a broken engine. Is putting us in a disaster path. I give several reasons for that. I keep saying that this is a disaster path because this is a system which builds up wealth and wealth for few people, depriving billions of people on the planet. Today, probably 1% of the population of the world owns more than 99% of the wealth of the entire world. So remaining 99% of the population of the world own only 1% of the world. So this is a ticking time bomb. That's the attention I wanted to draw in the book. And it will explode if you don't do anything. It's a one-way traffic of wealth going. And another aspect of it, all the wealth that goes to the 1% of the population, they live in a dozen countries, maybe 10 countries. So what happened to the rest of the world? So this is an untenable situation. Soon it will create social conflict, political conflicts internally within the country, because within the country, same way, few people have all the wealth, most of the people don't have. So this will express itself into lots of political disruptions and so on. So I said, this is a disaster path. Before we get to the end of this disaster path and explore and destruction, why don't we jump the ship and create a world which is more sane? It is, wealth is distributed, wealth is shared by everybody rather than concentrated in fewer hands. This is one argument. Another argument, this society, this economic engine is not helping us because of the environmental threat created by the system. And this doesn't give us much time, 20 years, maximum of 30 years, from 1.5 degrees Celsius to maximum of 2 degrees Celsius temperature. By 2050, that's a limit. Beyond that, it's a point of no return. But you're not taking it seriously. It has to be done in a few years' time. That's not what you feel. So if you cross that line, 2040 or 2050, we are finished. We have no chance of survival. Third point I mentioned is about the artificial intelligence, which will replace human being in jobs and so on. The projections are that in the next 15 years, more than 500 million people will be out of jobs because it will be taken by artificial intelligence. And I raised the question, what happens to this 500 million people? So where does the fate of the population?
Für Mohamed Yunus ist der Kapitalismus, wie wir ihn kennen, am Ende. Der Motor ist kaputt. Das System generiere nur Wohlstand für Reiche. 1% der Weltbevölkerung besitzt 99% des gesamten Vermögens weltweit. Eine tickende Zeitbombe. Und die beschreibt Yunus in seinem Buch. Es wird soziale und politische Krisen verursachen, sagt er. Deswegen müssen wir eine gesündere Welt schaffen. Gleichzeitig gibt es eine Umweltzerstörung, die so nicht weitergehen kann, so der Nobelpreisträger. Spätestens 2050 sei die Menschheit am Ende. Was ist also die Lösung? Müssen wir alles verstaatlichen?
So you want to change capitalism, but you don't want to nationalize?
Nationalization is not a solution because governments are not known to be good at running enterprises and things like that. That's not the way to go. What I was saying that we need to fix the system which created the present circumstances. It is based on a very flawed interpretation of a human being. A human being in the capitalist system is interpreted as someone who is driven by self-interest or selfishness. So we created a world based on selfishness because we believe in it. We all express our selfishness in the greatest power we can have. So we became greedy. All we see is money. We smell money, we sniff money, we see money.
That's what we think of capitalism.
That's what capitalism. So we are fitted with the glasses, with dollar signs and so on. This all began with the wrong interpretation of human being. Human beings are not about selfishness. Human beings are a mixture of selfishness and selflessness. The moment you introduce this idea, if you accept that, then you have to accept that we can make two kinds of business. Business to make money, the way we do it, and business to solve problems, which we don't do because we didn't have that idea. So we create businesses based on selflessness to solve people's problem without any intention of making a penny out of that business.
So you're calling for social businesses?
That's the business we call social business.
That's what you mentioned in your book, social businesses, that don't have cash dividends.
There's a non-dividend company to solve human problems. It's a kind of counter to the existing business of making money. In conventional businesses, everything is for me, nothing for others in my business. The counter is everything is for others in my business, nothing for me in this business. So this goes side by side. One is a selfishness base and the selflessness base. Once we have that, then suddenly world becomes a different place. I can run both, same person, same big company which runs big for big money, they can also run social business on the side to solve the problems of the people.
So if I understand you well, we're going to have social businesses alongside regular businesses.
Absolutely.
And social business owners, how do they get paid if they don't have profits or they don't have dividends?
They don't have to get paid because they decided not to be paid. It came out of selflessness. If they work in their own company, they could get salary because they work as a person to deliver their service. So that part is allowed. But as an owner of the company, you decided not to take any money out of their business because you did it for selfless purpose. So self doesn't appear in that business. Others appear in the business. So that's by definition and by choice. Nobody's forcing you to do that, but you want to do that.
Yunus will den Kapitalismus verändern, aber nicht durch Verstaatlichung. Regierungen denken nicht unternehmerisch. Unser System beruhe auf einer falschen Annahme, nämlich, dass der Mensch egoistisch sei. Aber Menschen seien nicht nur egoistisch, sondern auch uneigennützig. Und mit dieser Annahme müssen wir Unternehmen gründen, die die Probleme der Menschen lösen, mit der Absicht, keinen Cent Profit zu machen. Das sind soziale Unternehmen. HR Info, das Interview heute mit Friedensnobelpreisträger Mohamed Yunus. In seinem Buch schreibt Yunus, Kredit ist ein Menschenrecht. Bettler sollte man keine Spende geben, sondern einen Kredit. Warum?
I try to explain it in the book by saying that financial service is like economic oxygen. If we don't have oxygen in our life, we cannot breathe, we cannot function. Same thing happens in economic life. If you don't have the oxygen of financial services, you cannot work economically. So that's why the poor people remain inactive, because that financial oxygen is missing from them. The moment you connect them with the financial oxygen, suddenly they become alive and active, creative. Now they can function. Exactly the same function oxygen does to any human being, any organism. So I said, this is so fundamental that we should accept it as a human right. Because once you guarantee that, once you can provide that, all other things can happen. Yes, I talk about the beggars too. And I tried this within Grameen Bank. And we tell them, go from house to house begging. You get some food or money from them to survive for the day. Would you carry something with you? As you knock at the door to get some money from them or food from them, offer them something to sell, maybe some cookies, some candies, some fruits. So you have two businesses. One is the begging for charity, and the other is doing business. So you do that. They liked it. They took $10, $12, that's about the loan. And they became very active business people, door-to-door business people. And they suddenly feel that they can do business, and people respect them when they come with merchandise. They open the door, let them come in. So they feel very respected and accepted. Soon we have more than 200,000 beggars in our program. And within 2 years, we saw more than 25% of the beggars became full-time door-to-door salesperson and taking more loans to continue that. Then I kept telling my young colleagues of the bank, I said, look, given a chance, even a beggar show that they have the talent for economic activity and so on. When I talk to them, they tell me that by now they know which house is good for begging and which house is good for selling. I said, look, they didn't go to any business school. They already understand the market segmentation. They do it very wisely, very neatly, what kind of products they can bring. So this is it. You give a chance, it's a $10 thing. It's a $12 thing.
Mohamed Yunus vergibt Kredite auch an Bettler. Denn für ihn ist eine finanzielle Dienstleistung wie Sauerstoff. Ohne Sauerstoff könne man nicht leben. Das gilt auch für unser Wirtschaftsleben. Ohne den Sauerstoff finanzieller Dienstleistungen können wir nicht wirtschaftlich überleben. Deswegen bleiben arme Menschen arm. Ihnen fehlt der finanzielle Sauerstoff. 200.000 Bettler zählt der Nobelpreisträger schon zu seinen Kunden. Jetzt muss Mohamed Yunus die HR-Info-Interviewbox öffnen. Sie enthält einige Thesen. Sind sie wahr oder nicht?
Would you like to open the box?
Yes, I'd like to open the box. It looks a very nice box. Let's see what I got into the box. Wow. There's some writing here.
Yes, there are three statements.
Yeah.
And I would like to ask you if you agree.
Okay, go ahead.
Do you want to read them?
Yeah, Bill Gates and Warren Buffett have given away much money to charity and made the world a better place. True? It's true. But they have given out money. Only thing I talked to them, both Bill Gates and Warren Buffett, I said, it's better to use the money as a social business rather than give away. I said, charity money can be used only once. Money goes out, does the work, but never comes back. If you invest in social business, this money will continue to grow and grow. At the same time, it will solve problems. It will be used infinite times rather than one time as a charity. So this is the message that I try to give them to anybody who gives money in charity.
I pass it on to Bill Gates.
Please do. Thank you.
Number two.
The introduction of a financial transaction tax could alleviate poverty. True. Tax is a question of you're collecting the money from people. It's how do you use it? Government has not shown very good record around the world where the poverty is in using public money for addressing the people's problems. Rich country or poor country, always public money for the poor comes as a charity. In the West, it is called a welfare system. In the East or poor countries, they are given as a charity. They don't have a welfare system. Both, I tell them, can be done much better. Welfare can be a temporary solution to problem. But our job would be as a government, as a citizen, to help them get out of welfare as soon as possible. First thing to understand that all human beings are packed with unlimited creative power. Once we understand that they can be as good an entrepreneur as anybody else, just because they're welfare doesn't mean that they're any less human being than anybody else. So we should be helping them create opportunities for them so that they can become full human being and contribute to the society.
So I probably know your answer of the third thesis.
Yes, a basic income guarantee is an ethical and effective answer to globalization and to artificial intelligence and increasing number of robots in the workplace. True? Not true. It's not true. Definitely not. We don't want to become a society where we all become beggars. Artificial intelligence will run the economy and we sit there and eat, somebody provides us the food. That's not the human society. Human beings are the master of this planet. They want to remain master of this planet, not let the machines become the master over them. That's not the path. You see, technology is a wonderful thing. I'm not criticizing technology. But technology can be a blessing. Technology can be a curse. When we are talking about these things, about replacing human beings, we are taking technology in the curse path. We don't have to. We don't have to take technology to make weapons of mass destruction or weapons of any kind. Why should we produce any kind of technology to kill each other? So that's the direction we should not do that. We should to get around, make sure technology help us. Technology help us achieve our goal, not give the technology to take away our future.
Mohamed Yunus findet, dass die Spenden von Bill Gates und Warren Buffett vielen armen Menschen geholfen haben. Aber besser wäre es gewesen, sie hätten das Geld zinsfrei verliehen, denn dann hätte das Geld mehr arbeiten können. Nach einer Transaktionssteuer gefragt, sagt Yunus, wer Geld einsammelt, muss sich fragen, wie man es dann ausgibt. Und Regierungen haben nicht gezeigt, dass sie besonders gut darin sind, armen Menschen zu helfen. Aufgabe der Regierung ist es, die Armen vom Wohlfahrtssystem so schnell wie möglich zu befreien. Deswegen lehnt Mohamed Yunus auch ein garantiertes Grundeinkommen ab. Es degradiere alle zu Bettlern. Die Menschen seien die Herren des Planeten und das wollen sie auch bleiben. Die Technologie sollte uns helfen, unsere Ziele zu erfüllen und nicht unsere Zukunft zu rauben. HR Info, das Interview heute mit Friedensnobelpreisträger Mohamed Yunus. Welche Ziele hat sich der 78-Jährige noch gesteckt, will ich von ihm wissen.
I'm talking about creating a new civilization. I said the old civilization that we are passing through, in all indication, it is in a disaster path. Artificial technology is a disaster path. Whatever I say or not, it's coming. And coming in a big way, in a massive way. Unless we feel the emergency, we cannot stop it. So if it happens, we are done. We are finished. We can't even come to the halfway to the century before we are out. Environment is another issue. We'll be out by 2050 if we are not doing anything. Wealth concentration is the same thing. Again, I don't think we can survive beyond 2050 unless we do something. So we are in a disaster path. We have to jump the ship if you want to survive. This ship is fine. So what is the other ship? That's the new civilization I'm talking about. All the wealth will be shared by everybody. And that's the way it should be. And everybody will be an entrepreneur. So that's the kind of new civilization we are talking about. Let's make it happen.
Yunus glaubt nicht, dass die Menschheit über das Jahr 2050 überleben wird, wenn sie nicht jetzt handelt. Dieses Schiff sinke und wir müssen von Bord. Wie sieht das neue Schiff aus? Das ist die Zivilisation, von der sein Buch handelt. Eine Welt, in der der gesamte Wohlstand von allen geteilt wird und wo jeder ein Unternehmer ist.
Mr. Yunus, thank you so much for coming. And good luck.
Thank you very much.
Sie hörten HR Info, das Interview, heute mit Friedensnobelpreisträger Mohamed Yunus zur ARD-Themenwoche Gerechtigkeit. Sein neues Buch, Ein anderer Kapitalismus ist machbar, ist in der Verlagsgruppe Random House erschienen.
Mehr dazu auch online auf hrinforadio.de. Mein Name ist Jan Tussing.